Hey everyone, welcome back to the podcast. Throughout August, we are sharing some of our power, our favourites, and we are going all the way back today to February 2019, when I sat down to record with the wonderful Fern Cotton. Now, this episode was, of course, pre-pandemic, and we recorded in a studio in Soho. Fern is, of course, one of the UK's favourite broadcasters, and in this episode, we talk about her incredible career and all of the years that she spent at Radio 1, hosting the iconic Live Lounge. Fern is now the host of the Happy Place podcast and has created a whole festival that brings people together to move and breathe and talk about all things related to well-being. And she's written a number of books talking about well-being and specifically mental health. I remember that Fern was so candid in this conversation. She was an absolute dream guest to interview. Bear in mind that 4 years ago, it was kind of the start of my podcast hosting journey. I was still figuring it all out and I was really nervous. I really wanted it to go well. And then I absolutely loved every single minute. So let's have a listen to the Power Hour with Fern Cotton. Welcome to the Power Hour. I'm Adrienne Herbert, wellness coach, international speaker, and author. Each week, I speak to a variety of guests, from business founders to Olympic athletes, leading coaches, change makers, and innovators, to find out their daily habits, their rules to live by, and what motivates them to get up out of bed each day. Personally, I am on a mission to encourage, motivate, and inspire, so I hope that the Power Hour will help you to achieve your personal and professional goals. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. My guest today is a mother of two, a best-selling author and broadcasting legend. She has presented popular TV shows such as Top of the Pops, Children in Need Rocks, and Celebrity Juice. Back in 2005, she joined BBC Radio 1, where she was the host of The Live Lounge for an impressive 10 years. The Live Lounge mixed incredible live acoustic performances and celebrity interviews from some of the biggest music acts in the world. Today, she is the host of the hugely successful Happy Place podcast. As well as all of this, somehow she still manages to find the time to support a range of charities, such as Comic Relief, The Prince's Trust, and Copperfield. I am so excited to be joined by this absolute superstar and possibly the coolest mum on the planet. Welcome to the show, Fern Cotton.
Well, it's going to be a letdown now, isn't it? There's no way I'm going to be that person. I'm just a knackered mum today, but no, thank you anyway.
That's actually a shorter version, honestly. That could have gone on and on, but Fern, this is mega. I am so happy to have you in the studio and on the Power Hour.
Thank you so much for having me.
I mean, where do I start? What an incredible career you have had so far. When you first got started presenting, you were just 15, right?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, so young. So can we rewind it back to the beginning? I would love to know how you first got started.
God, I mean, I can just about remember because it was 22 years ago. So there's a lot of stuff to reel back through. But the sort of beginning bit was mega exciting. And I kind of, all through my childhood, I knew I wanted to do some sort of performing. I didn't know if it was acting, if it was dancing, whatever. And I kind of danced from 5 until I was about 18. When I was working, I still kind of went to ballet and street dance, whatever. And that was my mega passion. And then I started to go to drama club at about the age of 12 and thought, oh, actually, I really like the feel of this. This is really awesome. And I started going to auditions for anything, whether it be an advert or a theatre production. I did a bunch of little theatre shows locally and, you know, drama performances and some questionable TV adverts. And then went for this one audition for Disney Club, and I thought it was for an acting gig and it was for a presenting role. I didn't even know what that was, but I got the job and thought, I've made a terrible mistake here because I don't know what I'm doing. And I've sort of learned over the last 22 years to know what I'm doing, I guess. So yeah, that was the start of it all. And I feel really lucky that I had that break after kind of a lot of work before it, but I got that little break that's allowed me to move into all these interesting areas at a later point in life.
Yeah, amazing. And I never knew that you danced. I never knew that about you.
Yeah, I was completely obsessed. Sort of ballet, first of all, from 5 until I was about 12, then carried on doing ballet, but then started doing tap and contemporary. Yep. I loved contemporary and street dancing, like literally any type of dancing I would go nearly every day of the week, there was a local drama and dance club called Soul, which is still going, and run by these two brilliant people called Chris and Alex, and they kind of invented this amazing local drama and dance club for us all in our local area, just in the suburbs of Northwest London. And I would just go at any given opportunity. I'd do any class they had going on. I'd spend all weekend there. And I wanted to be like a dancer on Top of the Pops or be in the West End or something like that. Yeah. And that was my absolute passion.
Well, I'm the same. That's what I did too. So me, my brother and sister, we did all of that. And yeah, I went into dancing in town in the West End, and my brother did
as
well.
Wow, what shows did you do?
I did We Will Rock You. Wow. And actually, a lot of the listeners of this show probably don't know that, because, you know, you do things like way back when. And so it was probably, how many years? 9 years ago that I was in We Will Rock You. So yeah. Yeah.
That's so cool.
So listening to you say that, I know what you mean. I did everything the same, ballet, tap, modern, jazz. You just kind of
did any of it
at the dance school. Yeah.
Yeah, and you just, you know, you would dream about dance and think about it when you weren't there, and that's all you wanted to do. And I really miss it, because I'm almost sort of too nervous to go to a dance class now in my late 30s. I'm like, oh my God, what if it's full of 18-year-olds who are amazing? I'm too nervous. And I wish I could get back into it some way, because I really miss it. And I, you know, I dick around in the kitchen at home, spinning around. The kids are like, oh my God, stop, it's so embarrassing. But I miss it. I loved it
so
much.
Right, okay. Leave it with me.
Okay. Oh no, I'm now nervous.
Yeah, don't worry about it. But one thing that is so admirable and inspiring is your work ethic, because nobody gets to be where you are today without being prepared to work incredibly hard. So where do you think that ambition and that work ethic comes from?
You're right. I think a lot of people just go, oh, lucky, just everything on a plate. And it's absolutely not the case with me anyway. I've had some very lucky moments, like that first job, absolutely brilliant luck that I was in the right place at the right time. And this wonderful woman called Maddie, who I'm still great friends with, who was working at Buena Vista and doing all the Disney Club shows at the time, saw something in me, God knows what, but she, you know, saw that there was something to be moulded there, and I'm forever grateful. But post that, nothing is a given, and I am as freelance as they come. So there's no security in any of it. I have to create new challenges and new goals for myself constantly, which luckily I love. And I think naturally I'm very driven. My dad's the like most hardworking person I've ever met. He's worked since he was 15 and he still works every day now. He's a sign writer and he's done the same thing the whole time. He absolutely loves it, but he works so hard. And my mum's always been had a really kind of like vivacious drive about her and wanting to do lots and get lots done. So I think I kind of got the good bits of both of them in that way and have been able to sort of channel all of that sometimes quite intense energy that I have. It can be quite fidgety and edgy, but I can channel that into doing lots. And I have my, you know, I find it hard to sleep because my brain's constantly conjuring up things that are either completely pointless or sometimes great. And then I have to kind of put the work in to make things happen. So I think I am lucky that I naturally have a drive, and I don't ever think, oh man, I've got to write that podcast episode and then I've got to go and do a meeting. I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get stuck into it all. The only challenging bit is juggling it with a family, but the rest is a joy.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that actually. And I think it's really brilliant that you said that, you know, that often people do see people in, you know, wherever they are and think, oh, wow, lucky, good for her, you know. But actually, as you said, it doesn't come without hard work, and it certainly doesn't last without hard work.
No, and also it doesn't come without personally making mistakes, and also personally being rejected, personally going through things that go horrifically wrong. I've had all of those things happen, and then it's how you pick yourself back up and try again. And I don't think any person out there who's doing what they do well or enjoying what they do, you know, there's no exception to that rule. Everyone has been through a process of feeling like they're not doing well enough, or being rejected, or told they're not good enough, or being out of work. There's not many people that don't fit into that category.
Yeah, for sure. So on that, I guess, what would be your advice be to anyone listening to this show who may be at the start of their career, especially if they're trying to get into media? Because, as you know, the industry is notoriously tough.
It is. And I think the main thing for any job, even if it's completely away from media or whatever it is, fitness, like what you do so brilliantly, it's about not focusing on the end goal, because you think you've got an end goal, but you haven't really. I used to think I had an end goal, like I want to be this great TV presenter on brilliant primetime shows and for everyone to love it and blah, blah. That's not my goal anymore. It might have been when I was 17, 18, but I didn't end up there. You know, you have to constantly enjoy what you're doing. And even if you're at the first rung of the ladder, enjoy that bit and don't rush ahead too much, because I've done the same, worked in the same industry for 22 years, but now in the last sort of 3 years, I've had a bit of a change up and I'm focusing my energies elsewhere and putting it a lot more into well-being and mental health and my writing. And I feel like I'm at the first rung again. I'm starting all over again and I'm not daunted. And I know I'm very lucky that I've already had some very wonderful moments, but career-wise, but I am very much at the start again and I'm not racing to whatever that end goal might be. I'm just going, this is cool. There is another challenge. How am I going to tackle it and not get too ahead of myself? And also because you know you're never, you won't feel any different at the end of it. You're not going to be a better person, happier, more complete. You're just going to have had more experiences. So don't focus on that end bit. Just work hard. Don't be a dick. It's an important one.
Yep.
Be nice to people.
Yeah.
Like, be nice to everyone that you're working with. It doesn't mean you're a walkover. You know, you can still have a vehement opinion and you can say no, but be nice. And know that it is going to take work. There's no other way around it. There's just not.
Yeah, I love that. And I love the whole, you know, not just focusing on the end, because I think for a lot of people, just focusing on the end, you don't actually enjoy the process because you're just like, I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
But also when you focus on the end too much, sometimes that's so overwhelming because it can seem like such, you know, the goal is so far away from where you are now that you just kind of can't imagine the steps to getting there.
And then you cut corners and that's no use to you, because you have to go through every stage of whatever career you're in and experience the good bits and the bad bits to then end up feeling educated and knowledgeable in that field of work, whatever it might be.
Yeah, no shortcuts. I love it. Take notes, guys. So, as I mentioned at the beginning, BBC Radio 1 Live Lounge. Oh my goodness, I absolutely loved it. That must have been so much fun.
It was amazing. It was an extraordinary experience. It was terrifying at first because I took over from the amazing Jo Wiley, who I call Queen Jo to her face. And it was really scary. But it was just the most exceptional experience. You know, I got to interview every band, artist, dance act, DJ that I could have dreamed of, you know, just everyone.
Every week.
And sometimes every day, because we would do a month in September where we have someone every day. And, you know, it was, I never became sort of nonchalant about it. I was constantly sort of in awe of the fact that I had that access, and not only to interview them, but to sit, you know, 2 feet away from Coldplay, just tinkering on the piano, you know, Chris Martin on the piano and singing beautifully, or Dave Grohl on the next chair playing a song acoustic. You know, that never ever became normal, and I've got some amazing memories from that extraordinary time and the bizarre situations I ended up in. And it was a tough decision to let it go, but I'm all about chapters and starting again and testing yourself and not becoming complacent and like just trying new stuff, so I keep learning, really. So I knew that it was time, and now Clara's doing the most magnificent job there. Yeah. So it's lovely to kind of hand that over to another, you know, brilliant female broadcaster.
Yeah, it is an amazing show. So many epic performances, as you said. Obviously, they then brought the album out. I personally loved Lamar's cover of The Darkness. Remember that?
That's such a random one that I had forgotten about.
But that version is just sick.
He's such a good voice.
If you don't know that version, guys, check it out.
And he's got bright green eyes, and I couldn't stop. Every time I've interviewed him, I'm like, I can't deal with these eyes. Yeah, they're exceptional eyes. Yeah. Oh.
And also, another one I loved was Ella Eyre's cover of Sia, Elastic Heart. That was up there for me. Amazing.
God, you've got a great memory of these. I don't remember any of them.
Well, I was just about to say, do you have a favourite all-time Live Lounge performance?
Yes, I think I've probably got a few. I remember, this one moment was just really out of body experience. So we were at Maida Vale. If we had like a big live lounge where it was either a US artist who wanted a specific sound, or it needed more of a sort of technical engineering sort of look at what they were doing, we would go to Maida Vale. And one of those occasions we had Eminem in the live lounge, which again, it was just so surreal. And I turned up and he wasn't there. There was about five man mountains, these men that were like 8 foot tall and 6 foot wide. And instantly I was terrified, like, I don't want to do this. I think I'm just going to go home again. This is too much for me to deal with. An artist or a man that needs six mountains at all times with him seems too much for me to handle. So I was really terrified. But and he came in, did a rehearsal whilst we were playing songs out on air, and he swore the whole way through it. And I was like, this is going to be an absolute disaster because I'm going to have to jump in when he's singing and say, so I apologise, guys. I'm so sorry about that. I didn't want to do that. So then we had a quick chat and he was very sweet, and then did the performance and edited out every single swear word, cuss, whatever, so beautifully. Like, it was just so skilled.
Well,
and
he did.
So yeah, so he just kind of edited out every single word, cuss that would have been there. It was so beautiful to watch, and his energy was like, oh my God, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. His energy just lit up the room, and it was such a powerful experience because there was no audience. It was me and a producer and then these six mountain men people. And him stood there just emitting this energy. Wow. And then after the performance, he like really relaxed and we had a really nice interview and a really nice chat. And it was one of those sort of exceptional pinch me moments where I think I am so lucky that I got to stand 2 feet watching him just channel that energy. That was really, really amazing. And every time Coldplay came in, every time Dave Grohl came in, I remember Laura Mavula doing this beautiful piano performance of Coldplay Yellow, and I just cried my eyes out and I was like, wow. Don't even care. And Adele came in and did this whole Live Lounge special, 5 songs back to back, and that voice that close is just overwhelming, you know. Wow. Beautiful. So yeah, it was kind of a magical experience whenever we had that live face-to-face moment.
Yeah, that all of that is just absolute madness. And as I said at the beginning, you're like the coolest mum ever. Can you imagine telling your kids this? You know,
my
just hanging out with Eminem.
Just don't, I mean, even my stepkids, I've got stepkids who are 13 and 17, and they just think me and my husband are just tragic. You know, they're constantly taking the mickey out of us. We're not cool in the slightest. And I will try and impress them every again. Like, if they're listening to Eminem, I interviewed him before and they're like, great, good for you. Like, it's just not.
Just wait, they will.
They're, at the moment, all of them, I think, just think we're embarrassing.
And but that's a teenager's job, right?
I think so. And even my 3-year-old, just like, please stop dancing, Mum. Okay.
Yeah, just you wait. They're going to realise how cool you are.
I hope so.
And then moving on from your career in radio, you also have a huge audience on social media. On Instagram and Twitter combined, it's almost 10 million people. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's crazy. And you've been incredibly open and honest when talking about your own challenges with mental health over the last few years. And your recent podcast episode with Bryony Gordon was just amazing.
Thank you.
So why do you think it is important that we share these conversations?
I think it is massively, you know, I have this bizarre platform because I've been in the public eye for a long time. And what's the point of it unless you're going to use it for some good, you know? How many times can I post a picture of a nice jacket that I've bought, and what impact does that have? I mean, not very much, apart from, and of course, a very sort of narcissistic way of me going, oh, people like my new jacket. But why not use that to do something that has a positive impact? And, you know, I'm not doing anything out of the ordinary or doing anything above and beyond. I just think it's a much nicer way of doing things, to be authentic and to talk about things in a real way. And I didn't have the opportunity really before social media, or certainly before I started writing books, to talk about anything that was really going on in my life. I just sort of kept it very two-dimensional, and this is who I am on the TV, this is who I am on the radio, and that's all you're really getting. And then I kind of, you know, took a little bit of courage, I guess, to go, actually, I'm just going to talk about what I'm really going through and see what the reaction is. And I was terrified to do so, especially before my first book, Happy, came out. But then I've seen that the reaction's been one of connection rather than, you know, alienation or all the other things that I feared. So I'm very sort of lucky in the fact that I've sort of told bits of my story in a very true and authentic way. And that's, you know, now ended up resulted in other people wanting to share their stories with me and creating a sort of community of sorts, I guess.
Definitely, it definitely has, and I think it's amazing that you do use your platform and that you've, you know, opened up these conversations. And as you said, with your books and with your podcast, I don't think, Fern, that you actually will ever realise the impact of how many people that's truly helped.
Yeah, I don't like to think about anything too specific because, you know, I'm not the sort of person that's going to believe any hype at all. If anything, my default setting is, oh my God, everyone thinks I'm a knob. You know, that person hates me. I shouldn't have said that. You know, my constant default is to berate myself rather than to go, you know, well done me. And I'm sort of working on that now. And I certainly want to get that nailed by 40. So I've got 2 years to really focus on that one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess I can see some of the impact that I'm making, but really I think someone can read one of my books and that might have a positive impact on them, and they might decide to make small changes or whatever, but they're the ones who are doing the work. If they've decided to you know, listen to someone else's story, whether it be mine or anyone's, and then apply it to their own life and see how they can make that change, they're doing the hard work bit. So I kind of think that I'm lucky I get to kind of discuss these things and it might spark something in someone. But I think wholeheartedly the accountability comes from the people that are actually directly making those positive changes. And good for them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's true. But also this self-deprecating thing, Fern, that you're talking about, like you said, by 40, I feel like, honestly, I'm going to introduce you to some of these women who are online who are basically just... I feel like it's the opposite of that. It's literally like you've got to love yourself. You've got to.
I'm so trying.
Yeah, and also you've got to kind of celebrate, you know, your own achievements, your own success. And I think women, especially, we've kind of been taught that, you know, we mustn't do that. We must kind of, you know, downplay everything, and you can never be, you know, confident.
It's very British thing as very well. British. I think in America, everyone's like, "Yeah, man, you are great. I want to be like you." Whereas over here, someone's doing well, and everyone else goes, "Oh, good for you. Let's knock you down." And I think it's a very weird cultural, you know, bizarre mindset that we've been in for a long, long time. Yeah. And like you say, there are lots of mavericks out there wanting to change that language and how we talk about ourselves. And it's very, very important.
It's difficult to do for sure, but I do think that, you know, even just reading out your intro and you're like, oh, you know, I'm not going to live up to that. You know, you did all of those things. This is you. And it is hard for us sometimes to hear things about ourselves and go, yeah.
It is. And also, I think because I've been in the public eye a very long time, you know, you hear a lot of things about yourself you don't want to hear. And you get told a lot of things that aren't factually true or assumptions that are made. And when you are feeling more vulnerable or not great, you will take that on board and part of you can start to believe it. And that's the dangerous bit. You have to go, no. It doesn't matter that whoever thinks I'm this or that or has made such an assumption that I know isn't true. I have to go with what I know is correct for me and what feels right. And I think I have been battered by that to some extent. I think most people in the public eye feel that way, unless that, you know, I am a sensitive person.
Right.
And I don't think that helps or is conducive to what I like doing in the public eye, because you've got to be as hard as nails. And some people are, and that's, you know, what a skill to be able to put that armour on. I don't have that. I am, you know, really sensitive to everything and I take things on board, which I think is good in a way because it allows me to channel it into my writing and podcast. But I know that what I need to work on is that self-acceptance, self-love. And I'm only really understanding the true importance of that now, I think.
Wow, that's amazing. Good for you. Because you're amazing. Everybody loves Fern. Everybody.
Oh, God, that's very lovely of you. I'm trying not to say something self-deprecating after that and just go, thank you.
Thank you. Take it. So also in the episode with Bryony, and as I said, I loved that episode for so many reasons. I'm a runner and you guys talked a lot about running and about exercise. And so, yeah, I totally get it. I know that you run a bit sometimes too.
Yes.
But you also use the Fit app at home.
Yes, I do.
Talk to me.
Yes, I do. It's been a bit of a game changer. I first started talking to the guys that created the app and I was really intrigued because I'd never used any online fitness anything. You know, I went to the gym occasionally. I liked going to yoga classes, did a bit of yoga on my own at home because I've done it for a long time, and I'd go running quite a lot. And I thought, you know what, I'm up for giving it a go. I haven't really ever done workout classes or anything like that. And me and my husband have become quite obsessed. My husband, acutely obsessed with Richie Norton.
Okay.
It's a bit like there's three people in this marriage now, and I'm not okay with it. It's, you know, oh, babe, do you want to have a cup of tea? No, just me and Richie, I'm going to be in the front room doing a Richie thing.
I love it. My husband he's also obsessed. Does it. So there's lots of Richie man crushes going on.
Completely. Yeah. Because I think he's doing a really wonderful sort of yoga flow that is really great for guys. Yeah. And I think some blokes are a bit put off by yoga because it seems like it's going to be too feminine. Or I don't know what sort of idea they have around it, but Richie's really tapped into that husband zone.
Yes.
And Jesse is obsessed.
He's loving it.
He's loving it. I'm really trying to mix up. I do a lot of yours. If I wake up and I'm like, I'm feeling pretty damn good today,
yeah,
I will go one of your classes 40 minutes advanced.
Yes, Fern.
Yes, but I will.
If anyone listening who doesn't know what we're talking
so
about.
So hard.
Honestly, if you're listening to this thinking, what are they talking about? Basically, the Fit app is an app that you download on your phone.
Yeah.
And there's all different types of classes on there. There is cardio, strength, yoga, Pilates, 25 or 40 minutes. And I'm one of the trainers on the app, and Richie Norton that Fern
You go
mentioned.
Hardcore, though. You don't piss around. You are like, you, by the end of this, will not be able to walk.
No, that's because you picked advanced.
I'm an extremist.
Yeah, but there's beginner ones on there. Don't let Fern put you
I've never
off.
Done it. Never done that one. I went straight into advanced.
Yes. Well, I mean, how many times?
I like
times?
A challenge.
You've done it a few times.
Do you want me to check?
Oh my gosh, here we go. But honestly, there are easier classes too, so don't be put off. But Fern just likes to do the advanced one.
This is why I like the app, because I can browse my history and then I can be not at all self-deprecating. So, my fit. In total, in the last, I'd say, 4 months, 3 months, 82 classes.
Wowzers.
38 cardio, 1 strength. Didn't like it.
It's 40, a lot of push-ups.
43 rebalance.
There
I don't
go.
Know how many of those are yours, but there's bloody lot of yours in there.
That's very balanced. The rebalance
tons.
With the cardio, that's great.
Yeah, that suits me. And mixing it up still with a bit of running. I do like to go for a little. I had a little run yesterday. Really nice. Came back, had a little stretch. And then, you know, I didn't do anything today because I had to get up early. But tomorrow I might do one of yours. I might do a Kat Meffin, little yoga class. Just having... And also, because I'm really busy with my children, I don't have time to go, oh, let me look on a local yoga timetable and see when I can get to a class.
Yeah.
I don't have that time. So to be able to roll out a yoga mat, do a class there and then on my TV... Mm. Oh my God, that has been a game changer for
Amazing.
Me.
I love seeing your stories afterwards when you post.
Dripping with sweat, looking rank.
With your hair in a top knot.
Hair in a top knot, sweating in red.
And we mentioned a little bit about motherhood, so I do want to talk to you about that because you're a mother of two children.
Yeah.
I'm a mother myself. I've got one son. And actually, you are the first mother to be a guest on the Power Hour.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
I had a few people recently saying, are you going to, it's all, because the Power Hour we're going to talk about, but it's all about the first hour of the day because I'm an early bird as well and I get up early. And yeah, often people who aren't keen on this getting up early vibe are like, well, it's all right for, you know, this person and that person. And because Richie's been on the show as well and he talks about his morning thing, you know, he lights a candle, all of this. And people are like, well, all right for him. He hasn't got kids.
Yeah.
And one person said, you know, you need to get a parent on the show. And I was
here
like,
I am.
Hello, I'm a mum
too. Yeah, you are, exactly.
But you're a mum of two. So,
yes.
We should definitely talk about that. So how has, well, I guess how do you manage your career, motherhood, as you said, having some time for yourself?
It's tricky. And also because I like my job. So sometimes I have to say
to
myself...
You're about to say because I like my kids.
Yeah, I kind of like my kids. I love my kids and I really like my job.
Yeah.
So I have to tell myself to stop and to have time to myself. But it is hectic. So I've got stepchildren too. So we often have four kids in the house. And then, it, you know, logistically, it's ridiculous. I'm loading the dishwasher. I'm not exaggerating saying this. 7-8 times a day at the weekends. I'm washing so many sporting outfits.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you. Again, 5 loads of washing on a Saturday sometimes. It's ridiculous. So logistically, it's hardcore, but I'm really lucky. My husband is an amazing father. And also, he has a weird job. He's a musician. So sometimes he's away for ages and other times he's home for ages. So we either miss him or get sick of him. So it's kind of a very, you know, bizarre mix. But we just keep talking always, you know. Are you okay doing the school one today? Do you want me to do it? You know, we kind of just flip-flop everything and share everything. And we somehow stumble through it blindly and also just go day at a time. So we will plan ahead with diaries, but actually, as in getting stressed about things, we just try and go, right, today is today, and then let's deal with tomorrow when we wake up and get on with it, because it can be quite overwhelming.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And aside from your career, how do you think that motherhood has impacted you?
In lots of ways, good and bad, I would say, if I'm really honest. I think more positive, for sure. My priorities are completely flipped on their heads in the best possible way. And I see work now as something that I'm very lucky to have and that I really enjoy when I'm there. And I'm much more focused because I know I want to get home quickly, you know, as soon as I can. And then when I'm at home, I am such a homebody these days. I don't like going anywhere. I love being at home with my kids, cooking, baking, drawing, simple pleasures. So it's really enhanced that side of me. And I think negative impact has just been sort of general anxiety, which I think a lot of parents out there, working or not, will feel, because you love these little guys so much and you can't switch off the worry button very easily. And I think that is omnipresent, and you have to learn to deal with that and to mitigate it in some way so you don't completely stress yourself out. But I do think it's hard. And, you know, I know a lot of other mums that deal with intense anxiety and worry about things, and that is just, I think, part of the package, really.
I'm nodding along because I feel that too. And actually, yeah, I think before I became a mum, I was a lot more kind of, I don't know, I think I'm quite a thick-skinned and resilient person. I'm not such a sensitive person. However, my son is. And so I think seeing the world, like navigating it through his eyes over the last few years and knowing that he is sensitive, it's kind of, yeah, I've learned a lot. And I feel sometimes like you just want to, you can't change the world or protect, you know, you can't protect them from the world. They have to go and experience things and figure things out for themselves. And you can't always, you know, be there to make it how, you know.
Completely. And they have to learn and they have to go through tough times and you have to let go. And it's excruciating. But as I said, I think all the beautiful positives far outweigh the negatives. It's just about getting that balance, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So I'm going to talk to you about the Power Hour, because this is the Power Hour show. So as I mentioned a little bit, I get up early in the morning and I call it my Power Hour because the first hour of my day is when I believe is just the most powerful. If I start the day right and if I nail the hour, then I know I'm going to feel good for the rest of the day. And also, because I'm so easily distracted, that's the 1 hour of the day when there's the least distractions.
Yeah.
Because no one's, you know, sending me an email or WhatsApping me. Jude's still asleep sometimes as well.
Wow.
I know.
Who is this kid?
Well, I was going to say, because your kids get up early, I think, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
See, I get up before Jude.
What?
Yeah, I know. I can't even imagine
that experience.
I do get up about 5:30 though, and he wakes up at about 6:30.
Why?
To get my stuff done, like, honestly.
God, I need to be more like you.
No, but what I'm saying is, for me, that works, and I've figured that out over. Wow.
What time do you go to bed?
I do go to bed early. I'm a granny.
Go on, what time?
9:30.
Yes, so do I. But that's honestly, not. That's a reasonably good time to go to bed, I would say.
Yeah?
I can't go to bed later than that. I've got to go out tonight to a work thing, and I'm already thinking, how the hell am I staying awake until potentially 11 o'clock?
Yeah, I've heard you say that. You're like, no, time to leave, pumpkin.
I've got to go. I'm going to have to sneak out, ninja vanish, big time.
Yeah, I saw, I think it was a tweet the other day saying I used to like sneak out my house to go to parties, and now I sneak out of parties to go to my house.
That's me. I don't even go to parties, quite frankly.
But yeah, go to bed early so I can get up early.
Good.
And I do all this stuff. And yeah, I've been asking people like what their morning routine is, what time they get up. So I'd love to know, what the first hour of your day includes.
So we're having a fluky situation at the moment. I'm sort of almost tempting fate by saying this and having it recorded for a podcast, that my kids for the last month have woken up at 6:50 every day, which is the greatest lie-in I've had in 6 years.
Yeah.
And we just, each morning when one of the kids comes in and sort of taps us on the arm, we look at each other and go, oh, you know, you come out of that coma. And then I go, oh God, where's my phone? Look at the time and go, Jess, it's 10 to happen, and we literally can't believe it.
Yeah.
And we sort of skip out of bed. Before that, for the last 6 years, it's just been a free-for-all. It could be five, it could be half six on a good day, it could be 10 to 6, which you go, oh, it's only 10 to 6, anything past 6 is okay, I'll deal with that. It could be 4 to 6, it could be anything.
Yeah.
So it was always early.
Yeah.
Whereas we've had so much sleep recently that I started to say the other day, I said, do you think we're getting too much sleep? He's like, shut up, just enjoy
just it. Yeah.
So yeah, the last month, getting up at about 10 to 7, perfect. Yeah. And it's always pretty similar on a weekday, obviously, because Rex goes to school and Honey goes to nursery in the afternoon, so she's just sort of chilling. The first thing I do before anything is, before even I fed the cats, before anything, before I've spoken, I have to make a coffee.
Okay.
Nothing is happening until that coffee is in my hand.
You see, I'm caffeine free. This is so
weird
for me.
Who are you?
No, but let me tell you something. This is what people think. They think that the coffee is like, because I'm caffeine free, that's, I think it's something to do with your sleep and your kind of the level that you sleep. I'm not going to quote this right, but
this is why you look 12. This is why you look like a 12-year-old.
Thanks, I'll take that.
Even in my head, I'm going, how old is she? How can she have a child who's 7? She's 15.
No, I'm 31. 31, yeah.
No, you're not. Right, so she's lying. We're going to check some facts on Google later.
Yeah, I'm 31. And basically, the caffeine-free thing is honestly a secret weapon, because then, even though I'm going to bed at 9:30, it's like a deeper sleep. Whereas apparently, if you've got caffeine in your blood,
right,
it's like a lighter sleep.
Well, I only allow myself one at 7.
Okay.
I don't have any more in the day because I have such bad insomnia. Not all the time, but if I'm anxious,
yeah,
I literally don't sleep. I just lay awake all night. So if I have a second, I'm ruined. It's game over. I used to drink loads, smoke fags, drink booze. I did everything. I didn't care. Now it's one coffee a day.
Yeah.
I don't drink.
Yeah.
I'm the most boring human that ever existed. And that suits me.
I think I'm
me.
Beating you at that.
Okay, you might be beating me at
I'm
that.
You at
but
that.
It's working because you're 15, so it's fine. So I get up, have that coffee, and then everything's right with the world, and I chug loads of water. I drink so much water when I wake up, because if I don't have loads of time in the day to keep drinking it, I know I've had like probably a litre in the morning. I chug it. And just to like flush my system out and feel really good to the start of the day. Then it's a sort of a systematic who gets fed first situation. So usually the cats, because they're annoying me and going, cat food down. Then kids' breakfast. Honey's really leisurely. She's like sort of Princess Margaret. She'll have like a little bit of breakfast and then 30 minutes later, a little bit more. And then 30 minutes later, a little croissant. Whereas Rex wants a big breakfast right there and then. So it's feeding him. Then if my stepkids are there, we have to sort of beg Arthur, the 17-year-old, to get out of bed. You lure him down the stairs with pancakes, something like that. And my stepdaughter. So lots of cooking, lots of chaos.
Sounds busy, yeah.
Rex usually has to sort of do a sort of spelling revision thing in the morning because he has no focus after school at night. So we're also trying to beg him to do that and begging him to put his school uniform on. There's lots of bribery for that hour. So it is chaos, but I really like it. Mm. I don't sort of butt my head against it. I really quite enjoy all of that chaos and what comes with it. And because I've got a coffee in my hand, I'm really happy. I'm just sort of grateful that that's being drunk.
Yeah.
And there's kids' telly on and it's just noise and chaos. And that is right up till 8 when we leave to go to school.
Yeah.
So sometimes if they've woken up at 6, 6:30, like yesterday they woke up early, which I don't mind if it's post 6, I'll have my coffee. Mm. And then if Jessie's around, I'll say, right, you do all of that chaos bit. I'm going to go and do a fit, or I'm going to go for a run.
Yeah.
So by sort of 7:15, I've done my exercise for the day and it's over. And I prefer to do it then. I don't like doing it later in the day. I like to do it really early. So quite a lot of the time, he luckily doesn't. He likes to do it later.
Okay.
So we can tag team. So if I get mine in really early, I am so happy. And I try and exercise minimum 5 times a week. And it hasn't got to be anything crazy.
Yeah.
It could be 30 minutes of yoga. It could be a really fast walk. It could be a quick jog. But I like to keep active because it makes me feel great.
Yeah, that's really impressive. And I think, you know, a lot of what you're saying there, for a lot of parents, they're kind of thinking, oh my gosh, yes, me too. You know, it is chaos in the morning. And
chaos.
It can be kind of, and you know, I love what you said then about, you know, doing some work with Rex in the morning, because I do that with Jude. When he comes home from school, he's
tired.
And he's, you know, it's like pulling teeth trying to get him to do, you know,
they
spelling
can't do
stuff.
It.
So we do it in the morning as well.
It's
and,
the best.
Yeah, and people have said to me, they're like, what? He does it in the morning. And I think they perhaps think that, yeah, I'm like getting him out of bed and making him sit his dead. And it's like, I'm like,
what they're eating at breakfast. Yeah. I think their brains are in gear and they're kind of waking up to the day, and it's a good time for that information to stay. Whereas at night, he is so tired from school. He's tiny. He's only six. Do you know what I mean? So that works better for us for sure. But there's definitely no lighting candles and, you know, omming around like Richie Norton. There's none of that.
His power is long. He was telling us about his special tea, and he's like,
of course, like, he's got a special tea.
Richie Brew.
Not instant coffee like me.
No, but I love that it is chaos. And as you said, just having your coffee and being happy and knowing actually it's the small things sometimes that we can, like, you know, I love almond butter. I'm like obsessed with it.
Yum.
And so for me, literally, when I put my almond butter on my porridge in the morning, that for me is like one of the joys of my day. I'm just like, I love this moment because I'm sitting, eating my porridge.
Yeah, heaven. So. It's simple things. Simple pleasures.
And each week I ask the guests to give our listeners like a power hour challenge. So it's something that they can try out at home, something they can do this week if they have 1 hour to dedicate to kind of feeling better. It can be to, you know, improve their lives, improve themselves, anything really. So do you have something we could try?
Yes, I would say my go-to thing, and this is very specifically if I'm really tired, if I've had a bad night of insomnia, if the kids have woken me up at five, or if I've done an extortionately sort of, you know, ridiculously long day, and I feel exhausted and I might have to do something later on that day still, if I've got an hour, me and my husband are massively into doing online meditations. I'm not very good at just sitting there and try and sort of like block out all the chaos in my head. But there's one specific sort of technique, and you can find these on YouTube or anywhere, called Yoga Nidra, N-I-D-R-A. And they're really good for sort of just zoning out. And you can, I usually fall asleep for about 20 minutes, but you feel like you've had a whole night's sleep. And it basically sort of goes around your whole body, shutting off bits of it, you know, concentrating on each fingertip, each joint in your body. And then you kind of just start to really zone out and black out, and but then wake up feeling quite revived. So if we're really tired, that for me and my husband, and if the kids are at school, nursery, that is our go-to thing to do. Love it.
Amazing. Check it out, guys. Give it a try. I think I have done that once before, but it was at an event.
Nice.
I felt really embarrassed because I think, as you were just describing, it was like, relax, you know, think about the toes, think about the feet, and the next minute I'm snoring.
Yeah. Out for the count.
In an event.
Brilliant.
I think she kind of banged like a gong, and I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I'm back in the
room. It's like lack of caffeine. You're out like a switch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It was probably getting close to my bedtime.
Exactly.
Probably 5 p.m.
Exactly.
Okay, so before I ask you, I can't believe it's coming to the end, but before I ask you my closing question, I was going to say, where can people find you online? But let's be honest, 10 million, I doubt there's anyone listening to this show who doesn't follow you online.
Well, they might not. If not, you know, if you already follow me, go and buy my books.
Yes.
Because I've got three, well, I've got cookbooks and little kids' book, Yoga Babies and Hungry Babies, but my sort of big passion for the last few years have been Happy, Calm and Quiet. And I've sort of poured all my energy into those books. And they're sort of an extension of the podcast and the subject matter that we're sort of talking about there. And I've had very kind feedback from those books, I really appreciate. So if you haven't bought them as yet, Happy is about depression, Calm is about anxiety, and Quiet is about trying to mitigate all of that noise in our heads, the negative voices and the bad things we call ourselves.
Amazing. Check it out, guys. Thank you so much. So my closing question, which I ask to every single guest who comes onto the show, I really do believe that time is the most valuable thing we all have, hence the power hour. We can get our money back, but we can never get our time back. So Fern, what is the most valuable thing that time has taught you?
I think this goes back to having kids, and I think it's about being in the moment, because you watch them just in the moment, whether it be having an almighty tantrum or just joyfully like laughing about kicking leaves in a park, or the snow's out, let's go and run in the garden, it's snowing, you know, being spontaneous and living in those moments and almost eradicating what time means, I think is a joy and a thing you have to kind of practice, a bit of a discipline perhaps, to go, I'm not worrying about what's coming next or if I'm late or early or whatever, I'm just experiencing those feelings in the moment. And my kids have completely taught me that. And I'm still sort of getting on board with it, but it's beautiful to watch them do it exceptionally well.
Yeah, that's so true. I think all kids are like masters of, as you said, being present. They have no concept of time.
None.
5 minutes to a child means nothing.
Yeah.
So when you say, get your shoes on in 5 minutes, literally you're just playing
shoes
Lego
on.
With
yeah.
just with one sock on.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So I think, yeah, we all need to be a little bit more like that and just kind of, yeah, just, although I'm kind of, as I said, like, I really, really do value this thing of time, which is why I'm so, so grateful, Fern, that you came here to give us an
pleasure.
Hour of your time.
Pleasure.
So thank you so much. And thank you, everyone, for listening. As always, if you enjoying the show, then please share it with a friend or share it online, and don't forget you can rate and review it on iTunes. Have a fantastic week. Get inspired, get busy, get up early. See ya. Thanks, Fern.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.